Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
An absolutely tremendous Thursday to you. So glad you're with me on the program. Call in right now. Got some lines open. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Show account is at Cale Clark Show. Well, my wife Trish sent me a story idea, and this just blew me away. About a guy who was swallowed by a whale, and he lived to tell the tale. This is real life. It's not a joke. It's not something out of a movie. It does sound like something out of the Bible, the biblical book of Jonah, the prophet Jonah being swallowed by a whale. We actually did a whole series of programs on Jonah for the Faith Explained show. That was a lot of fun. So I'm hoping that they're up on the Faith Explained show page at relevantradio.com. A lot of our past series are there. So check that one out. But I hadn't heard this story before, and I thought it was absolutely a fresh story. But as it turns out, I clicked on the link, and you gotta be careful when you click on links. But I clicked on the link, and it turns out that sometimes what these a lot of news websites will do is they'll kind of re-present stories that happened a few months ago. So apparently, this did not happen yesterday, but it did happen a few months ago in Massachusetts. But it is a true story, and the guy who it happened to is still alive, and believe it or not, being swallowed by a whale, it's not even the first time he cheated death. His life is a movie. This guy is unbelievable. His name is Michael Packard. Michael Packard. He was a veteran lobster diver, and the story was originally written for the Cape Cod Press by Doug Frazier. And obviously Cape Cod in Massachusetts, big lobster town, a lot of great lobster eating in the region. And by the way, everybody listening in the Boston area right now, as you know, the U.S. Open is happening right now, a golf tournament in Brookline at the Country Club in Massachusetts. And incredible sports day in the Boston area. Of course, the U.S. Open, of course, started today. Red Sox are playing today. Tonight, the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors go head-to-head in Game 6 of the NBA Finals. So, and a lot of people probably tried to do all three things. A lot of great sports fans in Boston. But speaking of lobster, I wanted to say this. If you are watching the telecast, and we'll give our U.S. Open picks later, by the way. We ran out of time yesterday. We didn't get them in there. But Rory McIlroy, who won the Canadian Open last week, he's competing in the U.S. Open this week, sponsored by Nike. His Nike golf shoes on the bottom have a special sort of tribute to the area, to Massachusetts, to lobster. On the bottom of one shoe, on one sole of his foot, there's the Nike swoosh logo, and that's actually the body of a lobster. And then on the other shoe on the bottom, it actually says lobster, L-O-B-S-T-A-H, lobster. So you gotta love it. Well, speaking of lobster, Michael Packard, veteran lobster fisherman. He dived into the water. This is last June. This is June the 11th. And he dived into the water. It was his second dive of the day. And he kind of catches lobster the old-fashioned way. Goes all the way to the bottom and swoops them off, picks them off the ocean floor. And his boat was nearby. It was just off of Herring Cove Beach. There were a whole bunch of other boats out there. Those boats were mainly fishing for striped bass. Beautiful day. The water was 60 degrees, visibility 20 feet. And Michael Packard, at the time he was 56 years old, so he's probably about 57 now. He dove down and he's kind of going through the ocean food chain. And the underwater world is so amazing to me. This really speaks of the beauty of God's creation because there's a whole other universe, as you know. If you've ever seen those Blue Planet episodes or nature shows, I love watching the underwater episodes because there's so much cool stuff down there. So he's diving through all these different creatures swimming by, and he's thinking to himself, wow, this is the food chain here. You know, there are these big fish, small fish, And little did he know, he was about to become a part of that food chain. This is biblical, folks. He just then was swallowed by a humpback whale. Unbelievable. And so what was that like? What was that like? Well, he wrote about it afterwards. He said, I felt this huge shove, and the next thing I knew, things went completely dark. I could sense I was moving, but I could feel the whale squeezing with the muscles in his mouth. So a lot of people have suggested that, hey, maybe the biblical book of Jonah, there's no way this happened. This is an apocryphal story. Possible, but it's also obviously possible that it did happen the way the Bible says, because it actually happened to this dude, Michael Packard, in Massachusetts just a few months ago. Now, initially, when he got swallowed by the whale, he actually thought that it was a great white shark. That was his biggest fear, because they are plentiful in the region, and it's like Jaws, right? Dunna, 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 dunna. Okay, maybe Jim can get the real song for me, producer Jim. But he knew immediately that, thank God, it wasn't an actual great white shark that had swallowed him, because he was feeling around, and he couldn't feel any teeth. Humpback whales don't have teeth, so he sort of breathed a sigh of relief there for about half a second. Then he's like, I'm still going to die. I'll never see my kids again. He has two boys, 12 and 16 years old. And he's like, there's no way I'm getting out of here. I'm a goner. I'm an absolute goner. So he was wearing scuba gear at the time. And so he said, the only chance I've got is to try to get this whale to spit me up, just like Jonah. And so he starts fighting, you know, in the mouth of the whale, and he's kicking, he's thrashing about. And this whole process, by the way, only took about 30 seconds. It was only about half a minute, but I'm sure it felt like an eternity to Mr. Packard, to Michael Packard. And so he's annoying the whale. He's in the mouth. He's kicking it. He's trying to get out. And he starts moving around, because the whale starts shaking his head. And he's like, well, what is going on here? He didn't like what was happening. And so all of a sudden, Michael Packard, he says, I can see the light. I can see glimpses of light somehow coming through, you know, cracks in the whale's mouth. That's when he knew that he was above the surface of the water. The whale starts throwing his head side to side. He's going back and forth. The next thing he knows, he's outside of the whale's mouth. He's in the ocean. The whale has literally spit him up. And so what was going on at the time was that Josiah Mayo, who's one of the crewmen on Michael Packard's boat, he's kind of watching. He's on the boat, and then he all of a sudden sees this whale come up out of the surface. He sees this huge eruption, and you know, all this ocean foam gets spread all about. He sees this whale surface, and then he sees his buddy. He sees Michael Packard's legs in the water. He's like, "Oh my goodness, the whale spit him up!" And so gets back to the steering wheel. He gets the boat over to him. He rescues Michael Packard, who was. Obviously in some rough shape, and so gets him back to the shore. He radios back to shore, and the Provincetown Fire Department and an ambulance take him to Cape Cod Hospital. So this is an incredible story. I mean, so unfortunately the whale didn't have the common decency to just spit him up onto a beach like Jonah's whale did, but anyways, at least he's alive. He's in the water. He gets fished out, and he spends a couple days in the hospital. Some soft tissue injuries, but all in all, not too bad. And he even went on the Jimmy Kimmel Show to talk about this. Became a bit of a celebrity. So how did this even happen, by the way? Because the humpback whales don't usually want to have anything to do with human beings. It's so rare that this would even happen. And so the crewman from the boat, Josiah Mayo, says that basically what was going on here is probably a juvenile whale feeding, you know, just on stuff, you know, down below where Michael Packard was looking for the lobster. So he was a juvenile whale. So obviously he was underage. He can't be charged under the law. Just kidding. But basically what happens is when a humpback whale opens its mouth to feed, it can't really see anything because the mouth kind of opens up like a parachute and it blocks the vision of the whale. And so that's why a lot of the whales get entangled in fishing gear and all kinds of contraptions, stuff like that. Well, worst case scenario, they actually swallow a person. It's rare, but it has, believe it or not, it's actually happened before. About 150 years ago, a whale swallowed another guy from Cape Cod off of Cape Verde Islands about 150 years ago. So it extremely rare, but it's been known to happen. It's been known to happen. You got to be careful out there. But it's incredibly rare. Again, it's even to injure a swimmer, a diver, is so rare. It's basically non-existent. So now, sharks, obviously a different story. But believe it or not, this is not the first time that Michael Packard had a brush with almost certain death. Can you believe this? He survived being swallowed by a whale. Before that, 10 years ago, he was a passenger in a plane that crashed in the jungle in Costa Rica. Can you imagine that? So there were casualties. The pilot died, the co-pilot, a passenger. And Michael Packard had a lot of serious injuries at that point to his abdomen and his upper body. But there were five other passengers who survived, and they were found after two nights in the jungle in Costa Rica. And the rescuer said if they had found them just like a few hours later, they wouldn't have survived another night. So he barely cheated death that time. So if he's not religious by now, he certainly should be. I don't know whether he's purchased a lottery ticket, but my goodness, hopefully he's at least started to pray, because can you imagine? And no one would believe this story, but apparently this guy is such a legend as a lobster fisherman. He has such a great professional reputation that he's one of the few guys that people would actually believe that this really happened to. Because if someone else told the story, oh, yeah, it's a great fish story, great whale story. Yeah, you were swallowed by a whale. But with Michael Packard, everyone knows this guy. They know he's legit. And he'll have a story to tell for the rest of his life. Well, two stories. The plane crash, too. I can't believe this guy survived a plane crash and also being swallowed by a whale. So it's, by the way, it's an incredibly hard job to be a lobster fisherman. They're really tough. The waters are incredibly cold. And in fact, Michael Packard actually pulled out of the waters the dead body of one of his fellow fishermen one year. Divers have been dragged out to sea by the current. There are sharks. There have been a lot of close calls for Michael Packard, even aside from those two big ones that I mentioned. So really, really tough job. Kudos to him. Absolutely. Well, speaking of Jonah and the whale, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, a media maven of his time, he had something to say about this too. Listen to this clip.
I was lecturing at the University of California last year, and at the end of the lecture, I was asked questions, and one student said, "How was Jonah in the belly of the whale for 3 days?" I said, "I haven't the vaguest idea. But when I get to heaven, I shall ask Jonah." He said, "Suppose Jonah isn't there." I said, "Then you ask him."
Yeah, so he's basically saying the questioner might not make it to heaven. Okay, Bishop Fulton Sheen, very, very funny. And obviously, he's on Relevant Radio, too. You can check out Life is Worth Living on Relevant Radio. Unbelievable. So he's kind of a forebearer of our work here, reaching the world for Christ through the media here at Relevant Radio. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. I want to ask you this question. Has any biblical event ever come to life before your eyes or in your life? Now, maybe you haven't been swallowed by a whale like Michael Packard was, but maybe something else that echoes the biblical accounts happened to you or someone you know. I want to hear about this. 888-914-9149. We've got to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, I'm going to be giving you a piece of life advice from Warren Buffett, one of the richest men who have ever lived. And no, it's not a stock tip. It has nothing to do with stock markets or to disappoint. But you won't want to miss this. This is After the Break. It's The Cale Clark Show. Be right back. 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com. Doo-doo-loo! All right, you're back with me on the Cale Clark Show. Yeah, that was scary. Real life, not to do with a great white shark, but a whale, a humpback whale, swallowed a lobster fisherman named Michael Packard. Wasn't the first time he cheated death. He also survived a plane crash in the jungles of Costa Rica. My goodness. The whale spit him out just like Jonah. It really happened. Intriguing story. So I was asking you guys, has anything kind of biblical happened to you? 888-914-9149. It's the number to call on the Cale Clark Show. And by the way, I should also mention, as I said off the top, my wife Trish sent me that story. If you want to send me a story idea, if you got a question or comment, you can email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So let's go to the phones right now. Mary Ellen is calling from New Hampshire. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Oh, hi. So I'm not a regular listener because I usually work during these hours. But
okay.
Anyway, when my children were really young, we had a house fire.
Oh, no.
And it was in the middle of the night. And my husband, I woke up, thank God, but my husband was already getting into one of those sleeps from the smoke. He was confused. But anyway, we got our children out of the house, which was our only concern.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were running from the house, I never wanted to look back. I kept thinking about Lot's wife, and she turned into a pillar of salt. And I said, do not look back. Do not look back. And I never, ever looked at the house burning down. Never. I never would turn around. I wouldn't let my children turn around. So that's my biblical story.
that recalling that verse from the Bible certainly was exactly what you needed to hear at that point, Mary Ellen. I'm so thankful that none of you were harmed and got out of there. That is an absolutely devastating occurrence when a house fire takes place. That's absolutely frightening. So thank you for calling in, Mary Ellen, and obviously a first-time caller. And I know that you work normally during these hours, so we do appreciate the listen here on Relevant Radio. And for all of you out there, you can always, of course, get the podcast. All of our shows are in podcast form. They're usually up within about an hour after the program. So some people, because of their schedules, this is why we do it. They can't always listen live, but they can listen through the magic of podcasts on the Relevant Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts. And also we stream them through our website too, and you can share them with friends. So that's, studies have shown, we were just talking about this with some of the Relevant Radio top executives recently, that studies clearly show that people find out about the programs by word of mouth. That's how it works. I mean, you can advertise as much as you want and spend all kinds of dollars trying to get people through the media. But good old-fashioned friends telling friends, that's how it happens. So if you like the show, tell people about it. If you like other things you hear on Relevant Radio, share it with someone else, because we're trying to reach the world for Christ through the media. That's our theme. That's our mission. And that's what we do every day here on Relevant Radio. Well, I promised you just before the break that I wanted to share some life advice that I got from Warren Buffett. Not personally, I don't know the Oracle of Omaha. I can't give any stock tips. And this life advice has nothing to do with finances, but I thought it was really intriguing. And where did I read about this? Well, I read about it in a book that I'm really enjoying. I picked this book up. I was thinking about buying it. I saw it in the bookstore a whole bunch of different times, and I finally said, I'm just going to go ahead and make the plunge here. It's a book called 4,000 Weeks by a guy named Oliver Berkman. And Oliver Berkman, for many years, wrote a column for The Guardian. It was a long-running weekly column, and it was called This Column Will Change Your Life. So, talk about advertising. That certainly will grab you. And it was a weekly column, and it was really about psychology. And he wrote another book called The Antidote, which I haven't read. It's called The Antidote, Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive Thinking. So he's written for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all kinds of different publications, lives in New York City. I basically just read the dust jacket to you. But there you go. So those are the qualifications of Oliver Berkman. Now, so the book 4,000 Weeks is subtitled Time Management for Mortals. That's what kind of drew me in at first blush, because there's so much going on right now in my life. I don't know if you can identify. And there never seems to be enough time. There never seems to be enough time. And so I am all in trying to figure out ways to better use my time. I think it's good stewardship. And this is what we're judged on at some level at the end of our days. Were we good stewards of the time, talent, and treasure that God has given us? Some have a little, some have more than others in certain areas, whatever. Doesn't matter. The bottom line is we've got to be faithful with what we're given. We can't decide what we're given necessarily, but we do have a choice, and we do have a responsibility in how we're using it. So that's what kind of drew me in. I thought it was a book on time management. And as it turns out, Oliver Berkman used to be kind of a time management guru, and there's sort of a certain subset of people out there who live for this stuff. And this, they spend so much time studying time management techniques, they never get around to actually doing the work. And maybe you've heard of systems like Getting Things Done. I forget the guy's name who wrote that, but that was a big, big seller. And there have been lots of other versions of, okay, how do we, time management systems out there. That's what I thought this was going to be, but it's not. This book is not about that at all. It's more about the philosophy of time, which kind of makes sense because he did write a column on psychology. So it comes from that point of view, from a psychological point of view, from a philosophical point of view. I don't think that Oliver Berkman, I don't know if he's a person of faith or not. I haven't been able to pick that up for sure one way or the other through reading this book. But he's got some really intriguing things to say. And the reason why it's called 4,000 weeks is because that's the average lifespan of a human person. About 80 years, about 4,000 weeks. So that's all you've got. So he spends a lot of time in the book talking about the fact that you're going to die. Okay, it's like death and taxes. It's going to happen. And so that it's a little bit like a memento mori type of look at life in that sense. I'm not saying, again, he's coming from a Catholic point of view or a faith-based point of view, but Sister Teresa Alethea Noble of the Daughters of St. Paul, she's really gotten this theme revived again in the Catholic world, this idea of remember your death, memento mori. And that should really help you to make better choices in life and make better use of the time that God has given you. And so there's a lot of chatter in the book about that. But he talks about the trade-offs. There's so many books out there that say you can have it all. You can really do it all. But I don't think that's possible. I really don't think that's possible. And Berkman kind of agrees with that point of view. And I'm just going to read you a little quote from the book. He says, okay, the crucial question is what to do with your limited time. And as a finite human, you're always making hard choices. So in his case, he talks about that as he's writing this page, which eventually got into the book, he says, I'm spending this afternoon on one thing that matters to me, which is writing. But in order to do that, I necessarily had to forego many other things that mattered too. For example, playing with my son. And he says, it's natural to see this situation as highly regrettable and to yearn for some alternative version of existence in which we wouldn't have to choose between valued activities in this way. And just to interject here, a little sidebar, I think in many ways this is the appeal of heaven for most of us. This idea that in heaven, we're outside of time, we're in eternity, we'll finally have the time in eternity, as it were, to do all the things that we would have loved to have done on earth, but we have to make choices. We can't do everything. We can't be, my daughter's always saying, I want to be a nun. I want to be a vet. I want to be a doctor. Maybe you could be a vet who's a nun. I suppose they're out there maybe, but generally speaking, we do have to make choices and we long to do everything. We can't in this world. And we don't always have the time for the things that we want for our pursuits, for things that we like to enjoy doing. But anyway, so just back to Oliver Berkman for a second. So he says it's tempting to see this as highly regrettable, that you got to make these trade-offs in life, got to make these choices, and you wish there it wasn't that way. But he's like, you know what? Wouldn't it make more sense of, instead of regretting, you know, that you've got to make these choices, just you should be thankful that you get to make them, that you get to make them. And so there's a lot of talk in our culture about FOMO, right? Which is an acronym that stands for fear of missing out. You've probably heard that before. It's always a big hashtag on social media, FOMO. Okay, I'm afraid of missing out. It's that regret. Oh man, I wish I was there. But he's I don't know if he's the first to coin this term, but he's coined another acronym, Oliver Berkman, JOMO, which stands for the joy of missing out. The joy of missing out. That's intriguing. That's intriguing. So there's an infinite number of things that you could do, but you've decided to do this. And by the way, I thank you for deciding to spend this time listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio right now. You could be doing a lot of other things with your time, and I'm grateful that you're here. I appreciate you. I appreciate you're listening and taking the time and being here with me. So what he says, Oliver Berkman, is that you could have chosen to do something different than what you're doing right now, but the fact that you did choose whatever it is that you're doing, that bestows meaning on the choice that you did make. And that same concept applies throughout your entire life. So he gives the example of marriage. He says, it's precisely the fact that getting married forecloses the possibility of meeting someone else. Someone who might genuinely have been a better marriage partner. Who could ever say? That's what makes marriage meaningful. The fact that you did make that choice, that commitment. And obviously, if it's a Catholic wedding, you did so. It's a sacrament. And of course, other Christian weddings can be sacramental too. If there's two baptized persons, male and female, of course, a man and woman getting married, if they're both baptized, it's a sacramental marriage, even if they don't realize that. A lot of my Protestant friends don't understand. Hey, you've got a sacramental marriage. Even though you might not see it that way because you've both been properly baptized anyways. Having said that, you're making that commitment before God, before other people. It's a public sacrament. So the fact that you made that choice, that's part of what makes it meaningful. And so this is the JOMO, the joy of missing out. It's the, as Berkman says, the thrilling recognition that you wouldn't even really want to be able to do everything, even if you could. Because if you don't have to decide what you're going to miss out on, your choices can't really mean anything. So you've got to embrace the fact that you're foregoing certain pleasures or neglecting certain obligations because what you've decided to do instead, earning money to support your family, writing your novel, bathing your toddler, pausing for a moment on a hiking trail to watch the pale winter sun sink below the horizon at dusk, that's how you've chosen to spend a portion of time. And really, all of your life is a gift, and that's how you've chosen to do it. That's what gives your choices meaning, that you could have done something else. So what does this have to do with Warren Buffett? I'm going to get to this. You might be thinking, okay, I want the tip from Warren Buffett. Well, it's in the book. But kind of leading up to that, again, this whole question of time and choices that you've got to make. One of the other big productivity gurus that people have probably heard about is Stephen Covey. Now, you know that Stephen Covey wrote this book years ago. I think it was 1994, called The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. It's become a classic, been reprinted many, many times. And there's an illustration in, I think it's in that book, but it's also in another book that he wrote called First Things First, that you've no doubt heard. It's the idea of the jar. How many things can you fit in the jar? So Stephen Covey has this illustration of a teacher who shows up in front of his class, and he's got this jar. And he's also got a whole bunch of rocks of different sizes. He's got some big rocks. He's got some pebbles. He's got a bag of sand, crushed rocks, I guess you could say. And he's got this big glass jar. So here's the challenge for the students. Can you fit all the rocks, all the pebbles, all the sand into the jar? So the students who are, you know, maybe a little on the slow side, they try to put the pebbles, they try to put the sand in first, and then they're like, oops, now I can't get the big rock in. They won't fit. So the teacher, you know, says, oh, here's how you do it, kids. So the first thing you've got to do is put the big rocks in first, then the pebbles, then the sand, and then everything kind of, you know, the sand will nestle around the bigger rocks, and then there's room for everything. Comfortably, everything will fit. So what's the point of this story? I think it's pretty obvious, but if you make time first for the big things, for the big rocks, for the most important items, you'll be able to get them done. then you will have the room to do some of this other stuff on the side. But if you don't look at your day this way, if you don't put the big things in order, all the big items you got to get done, if you don't prioritize those things, you're not going to be able to fit them in at all. So here's what Oliver Berkman says. He says, the problem with this story is that it's a lie. Because the teacher in the parable is being dishonest here because he's rigged the demonstration. Now, how's he rigged it? Because it does seem to make sense, right? But here's the problem. He only brought a few of the big rocks into the classroom because he only brought as many big rocks that he knew for sure would fit into the jar. But the problem is, in our lives, is that there's more than a few big rocks that we'd like to get in the jar. There are a lot of big things that we'd like to do. There are too many rocks. There are too many choices. There are too many really, really important things. And most of them, Berkman says, are never making it anywhere near that jar. So here's the crucial question. It's not how to differentiate between the things that matter and those that don't really matter too much, but what do you do when too many things feel very important? All of them seem to be the big rocks. How do you deal with that dilemma? So this is really, really important. And so this is really where Warren Buffett comes in a little bit. So a few ways to deal with this issue. And you've probably been there too. There are a lot of things I'd like to do, but I can't possibly do them all. And some of them are even big things. And Berkman brings up, this is an illustration that's kind of shop-worn. It's been used for a long time. This idea of paying yourself first. Paying yourself first. They say that, hey, when it comes to investing, what you ought to do is take your paycheck and immediately set aside whatever it is, like 5%, 10% that you're going to invest. Because if you don't, you're going to spend it at the coffee shop or at the fast food joint. And, oh, man, where did all my money go? Well, I spent it watching Top Gun Maverick for the 10th time this week. So, oh, man, now I've got no money left over to invest. Or, you know, obviously for a Catholic, you might be thinking, well, maybe my first priority is to put aside some money for the work of God, whether it's my local parish or I donate to Relevant Radio on a monthly basis, recurring donor. Really important, by the way, we need that to stay on the air. And so we have pledge drives four times a year. Anyways, but the point is that whatever you decide to do, if you don't understand first that this is going to happen, then you'll never have it at the end. You can't wait. You can't do that. So the idea of the investing in this way, whether you're investing in the kingdom or whether you're investing in the stock market, is that you won't feel the pinch. If it was never there in the first place, if you set it aside right away, you'll never know it was gone. You can't miss what you never had. That's the idea. The same kind of logic, though, applies to your time. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, by the way, on Relevant Radio. So the same logic applies to your time. So if you try to deal with all the other things, because there are a lot of important things we have to do, you're never going to be able to, if you deal with all those things first, you're never going to be having enough time left over at the end to do the things that really matter to you. So let's say that you want to spend more time with your spouse. If you leave that to chance, if you leave that for the leftover time, it's not going to happen. So you got to set aside that date night. You got to set aside that time in the week. Or if you want to write a novel, you want to write a book, and you know, hands up, guilty as charged here. I've been meaning to do this for a long time. If I don't set aside the time to do it, then it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen at the end of the day. I'm going to be too tired. So a lot of writers, and he mentions this one particular writer named Jessica Abel, who's a creativity coach, apparently, that she calls it claiming time. So she wanted to draw. She wanted to do some illustrating work. So the only way she could do that was she claimed the time. She said, I'm just going to do this. Whatever the consequences might be, I'm going to take an hour to do this thing that I really want to do. And I'm going to accept the consequences, even though I might neglect other things that I sincerely value. You're never going to be magically done with everything and have tons of free time, like hopefully we will in heaven. We'll have all of eternity, right? So that's one problem. So he says a lot of other things about this. Maybe just try to do three big items every day because there's only so many hours in the day. But here's where Warren Buffett comes in. And this might be an apocryphal story. I don't know if this is a true story or not that Oliver Berkman tells in his book, 4,000 Weeks. It's not original to him. He thinks it might not be a real story, but it doesn't really matter because the point of the story is true whether or not this actually happened in Buffett's life. So here's the story. apparently, as you might imagine, Warren Buffett has his own private jet. So he's asked by his personal pilot. He says, "Hey, Mr. Buffett, I've got a question for you. What is it? How do I properly set my priorities?" I think this is interesting. If this is a real story, he's not asking him, you know, what stocks would you pick? He'd probably tell him, just buy stock in Berkshire Hathaway, for goodness sakes. But those are expensive stocks. But Buffett actually says, okay, well, here's my advice for you. I want you to make a list of the top 25 things that you want out of life. I want you to really think about it and arrange them in order. Okay, so number one is the most important thing that you want out of life. And then number 25, that's the lowest priority on your list. But these are all things that you want out of life. Put them in order from the most important to the least. Top 25 things you want out of life. Okay, so, all right, Mr. Buffett, I'll do that. So he goes away, he thinks about it, mulls it over, and then he makes his list. Then he brings it back to Warren Buffett. He's like, okay, this is my list. These are the top 25 things I want to do in life, and this is what I want. And so Warren Buffett says something kind of surprising. He says, all right, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the top five and leave them there, and the other 20, I want you to cross them out completely. Well, hold on here. I thought you wanted me to put down the top 25 things I want out of life. He says, no, I know you want all these things, but I want you to cross off the bottom 20. I only want you to keep the top five. Why? Because here's the thing. These top five things are the five things you want to do most. But the other 20, these are not things that you should only turn to when you have the time. They're not second tier priorities. In fact, these are things that you should avoid at all cost. You need to absolutely cut these things out of your life, even though you want to do them. Why? Because these are the ambitions that are insufficiently important to you to get into the top five. They're not going to form the core of your life. They're not that important to you, but they're seductive enough to distract you from the things that really matter most. So if you really want to make an impact, you really want to get these things done, you can only focus on the top five things. Wow. Now whether or not that's an apocryphal story, it's a powerful story. And there's a great lesson there. And what Oliver Berkman says is that the problem is, in this world, we've got too many big rocks that we want to get into the jar. And it's the what he calls the moderately appealing rocks, the fairly interesting job opportunity, the semi-enjoyable friendship. These are the things that can destroy your life, because you've got to learn how to say no. Because they're good, they're okay, but they'll prevent you from doing the things you really need to do with the limited time that God has given you. So, and San Jose Maria Escrivá said this in his book, The Way, this great book of spiritual maxims: get used to saying no. And the hardest thing is not to say no to the obvious bad stuff, the obvious bad sins that we've got to avoid. The hardest thing is to say no to the good things. They are good, but they're not the best. They're not the things you should be spending your time on. You need to start learning how to say no to things you actually want to do so that you can do the things that are the most important, that you only have one life. So I thought that was an intriguing story about Buffett. And I'm really enjoying reading this book. And I'll have maybe some more to say about this later on, maybe a full book review. But I'm really enjoying this book, 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. And learning some fun philosophical stuff. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Call in. What are your thoughts on this? Have you ever gone through something like that? Call in, let me know. 888-914-9149. Be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois life insurance society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Hey, Carolina, if you're out there, you just hung up. I was just about to take your call. So call back. It was a great phone call. I know what you wanted to talk about, and I want to talk to you. 888-914. We'll put you to the front of the line. 888-914. I have the power to do that. 888-914-9149. And I want to hear what your take is on what we were talking about before, earlier in the show. We were talking about a real-life Jonah, a fisherman in Massachusetts, a lobster fisherman who actually got spit up out of a whale. A whale swallowed him up. He lived to tell the tale. And he also cheated death 10 years before that in a plane crash. And I was asking you, what kind of biblical events happened in your life? Did something like a miracle from the scriptures ever happen to you or somebody that you know? That was one question. Then we talked about this intriguing book I'm reading called 4,000 Weeks. The choices that we have to make in the time that we've been given, how do we spend that? It's called Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. It was a New York Times bestseller. I find that really intriguing, and I shared an anecdote about Warren Buffett. We don't know whether it's a true story or not, about advice that he gave on priorities in life. And if you missed that little segment, you can certainly check the podcast after the program. It'll be up about within the hour after the show. So let's go back to the phones right now. Let's go to Dee Dee in Phoenix. Great to have you back on. Dee Dee, how you doing?
Hi, Carol.
Hey, it's great to hear your voice,
Carol,
again.
Well, thank you. I'm excited. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, oh, God, I've got to get this guy's book. I'm ready to buy the book. What turned me on was the 4,000 weeks.
4,000 weeks,
anyway,
that's all we
actually,
got.
Actually, I know, well, I don't know about that. Only God knows that.
That's true.
But
that's true.
My question to you, Carol, is Oliver Berkman? Mm-hmm. Duh? I've never heard of him. And I'm rather suspicious. I'm an avid, voracious reader, actually.
Okay.
And what do we know about this guy? What's his background?
I don't know much about his background either. I did see this book sort of prominently displayed in several bookstores, and the dust jacket kind of caught my eye because it had like a banana in various stages of decomposition. So, you know, your life starts off green and somewhat naive, and then you become withered. And anyways, but smell bad. No, I'm only kidding. But Oliver Berkman, I don't know much about him other than the fact that he wrote this book, but apparently he has written for the New York Times in the past, Wall Street Journal. He wrote a long-running column in The Guardian on psychology. I don't have too much experience with him or know too much about his background, but I'm enjoying the book so far for what it's worth. So thanks, Dee Dee, for the call. Always appreciate hearing from you. We're going to go now to Robin in Arizona. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. You?
Good, thank you.
Good stuff. So what's on your mind, Robin?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about the list because I thought that's a really good idea. And I've already done that for myself to help me in the past because I do have three kids. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to make a comment to help maybe people or kids. What I did for my kids is when we would pray as a family, they don't really know what to ask for. And they just kind of go through the motions and thank God for what we have and stuff. And So I had them make a list of all of their dreams and any problem that they want to pray for as well. So they'll always have it written down and never, they'll always remember what they need to pray for.
I think that's excellent advice, Robin. I really, really think that's a great thing to do that you taught your kids. And I think everybody should do that. So, by the way, if anybody just tuning in now missed what we were talking about, just to a few minutes ago, there's a story in Berkman's book, 4,000 Weeks, about Warren Buffett, whether it's an apocryphal tale or not, we don't know for sure, but that his personal pilot asked him about life advice, and Buffett basically said, write down the 25 things that you want to do in life. What do you want to get out of life? The top 25 things. And rank them in order, number 1 to 25, what's most important? And then basically Buffett said, I want you to scratch off the bottom 20. Like, even though they're good things, they're great things, they're things that you actually want to do, the good things will prevent you from doing the most important things. And that's the real tough trade-off, saying no, not to just things that are obviously bad, but to things that are good, will prevent you from focusing on what you really want to do, maybe ultimately what God really wants you to do, just focus on those top five. So interesting advice. And I think what you're saying about what you taught your kids about goal setting, I think it's important to write down your goals. I really do. Some people don't do that. And even in the book, Oliver Berkman says, I don't write down my goals. I probably should go back to doing that, because I do think there is something about even just putting it on paper. Number one, it helps you to sort of think it through, to write it down and say, what do I really want to do here? Number one. And just the act of writing it down. I think there have been some studies on this that just simply writing down your goals is a powerful first step to actually coming anywhere close to achieving them. You got to know what you're shooting for, right? And then also this idea of writing down your prayers, I think, is really important too, because a lot of people are in the habit of keeping a prayer journal. And I think that's not a bad idea, because when you write down things that you're praying for, you'll be surprised. You look back on this and, wow, God actually answered the prayer. And we know that God answers prayer. He always answers prayers. It's either yes, no, or wait, you know, maybe later, right? It's not the right time. But he always does answer prayer. But sometimes we get discouraged and we forget. We forget. God never forgets, right? But we forget that we prayed for certain things, or we might have maybe forgotten some of the stuff that we prayed for, and just it's kind of slipped by. Wow, I forgot about the fact that I prayed for that. That actually happened, or I was able to get out of this jam, whatever it may be. So I think that's really important as well, to actually write down those prayers. So thank you very much for the call, Robin. That was Robin in Arizona. So anyways, I thought that was really intriguing. This whole idea of making choices, you've got to make choices. And that's the beauty of it. This is the JOMO, the joy of missing out. And a lot of people, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to marriage, they get trapped in this cycle. And he talks about this in the book, that they wait for this perfect person to come along. And very often, sometimes people wait a very, very long time and they never actually make a decision. They're on all these dating websites and they're looking for, and that I think, you know, the advent of these modern dating sites, I think many people have found their spouse through these things. I know people who have, through Catholic dating sites. But also, I think it makes the whole process a little bit more complex for people, because there's this dizzying array of potential partners out there. You got to sort of sort through all the profiles. What are they really like in real life? Probably maybe a different story. I don't know. But the problem is that a lot of people will spend years sifting through these things, never actually deeming anybody good enough to actually maybe even meet or date. And then, but that's a choice too. That's a choice that you're making. If making a choice to, I'm going to commit myself to this person for life, that's a choice. But not making the choice is also a choice. And then you're choosing to spend those years not being with someone, if you have a choice. So it's something to think about. And that's what makes it meaningful. And again, there's this freedom, and he talks about this, Berkman talks about this, and I think, again, he may be coming from this from a totally secular perspective, but this idea that, hey, when you do make this choice, it gives you, yes, it does close all the other doors, but it means that you've got this wide open door in this one relationship. You can go deeper. You can go into this adventure and not have to worry about, hey, who am I going to spend my life with? This is the person, and then get about the business of actually living your life. So I think it's intriguing. And so anyways, there's a lot more stuff that he talks about in the book, and I look forward to reading the rest of it. Well, one thing we didn't get to do yesterday, but I want to do right now, it's cheating a little bit. It's cheating a little bit because the tournament's already started. We promise, we always do this. We give you our picks for the big tournaments. The U.S. Open is happening this weekend for the men. In Brookline, Massachusetts, at the Country Club, where Francis we met shocked the world in 1913. This 20-year-old unknown, who was a caddy, he lived across the street from the golf course, was a caddy and beat the biggest players from all over the world. Really, that's what helped make golf such an American game and so important. It's a great story. You'll hear lots about this over the weekend if you watch the telecast. But Patrick Alog, who's working the phones for us right now, Patrick had picked to win the tournament, and this isn't cheating. He did this yesterday before it started. He had picked Tony Finau to win, and his dark horse sleeper pick was Daniel Berger, which I think is a mistake. But anyways, Jim, who did you pick, Jim?
So I'm not as avid of a golf fan as you guys, but I think Rory McIlroy stays hot and he wins.
Okay.
And I'm going to pick you as my dark horse. Why not?
Well, one reason would be I'm not actually in the tournament.
But I know.
I wish I was. I wish I was.
I've heard you've got some pretty good putting skills.
Yeah, I'm a good putter, but the rest of it is the problem. And the U.S. Open is an open tournament. All you have to do is qualify, and you could potentially win it. You could do it. So, well, I'm going to go with my, and I'm not cheating here. I haven't seen who's winning today. I've been working away, so I hadn't had a chance to. But I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa to win. British Open champion from last year, former PGA champion, great ball striker. I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa. My dark horse pick is last year's champion, John Rahm. But I don't know. It's hard to go back-to-back. It really is. So apparently, okay, so Patrick Aluck says the current leader is Adam Hadwin. He's a Canadian, so. Oh, Canada. I don't know if that bodes well, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And, hey, it's been a great, great hour with you once again on the Cale Clark Show. Want again remind you that you can get the archives of all of these programs. If you want to binge listen to the week, you can always go to relevantradio.com, the Relevant Radio app. You can get all the shows as podcasts, share them with a friend. And that goes for the Faith Explained as well and all the other great shows here on Relevant Radio. Patrick Aluck took your calls. Oh, Patrick said, and he says, he just texted me saying John Rahm is not a dark horse. So he thinks I'm... It's true. That's true. That's not. He's not really technically. He was the number one player in the world a few months ago, so it's not exactly a leap in the dark to pick that guy. But anyways, he's still my dark horse. I don't care what you say. And Jim Shaper produced. Jim Shaper is. Well, he's probably kind of mad. He's probably kind of mad because the Tampa Bay Lightning did lose last night. But his hero, Pat Maroon. He was almost the GOAT. He was in the penalty box. He got out just before Colorado scored the winning goal in overtime. But so it wasn't his fault, really. But, hey, Colorado won. Cale Makar and friends, they got it done. We got it done today on the Cale Clark Show. Thanks for joining me today. Really appreciate you listening. Timory's up next, followed by the Family Rosary Across America. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.